Hello, a very good Saturday morning. You're very welcome along to the weekend edition with me, Greg Hughes. Coming up on the programme, President Michael D. Higgins joins us for an extended chat about the diaspora, Ian Paisley and his Orange Order invite to Rosnala. Clairvoyant and medium Kate Houston joins us to discuss her career and people impersonating her. We hear of a 48-hour songwriting boot camp and we preview Culture Night, which takes place next Friday. That and loads more besides. Hopefully, tons of your calls, comments and requests. You can call us right now. Yvonne taking your calls, 074-9125000. Text the programme, 086-77-00555, or tweet me at GregHughes2. Okay, a bit misty and overcast still around about Letterkenny this morning, but I'm reliably informed that today is going to prove to be another enjoyable sunny day. So that's something to look forward to. Okay, joining us to look at the news today, we are joined in studio by Claudia Kennedy, who is a member of Fianna Fáil's National Executive, a community activist and also a teacher at the Finn Valley College. A very good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. It's
great to have you back. Your second visit in with us.
Indeed. It's great to be back and thank you for having me.
Indeed. Now, obviously, the big story of yesterday and in today, I presume, on the front of the newspapers is the death of Ian Paisley.
Indeed, Greg. And one of the things that struck me last night was the comments that were made right across the political divide. They were so positive. And I think his lasting legacy in terms of history will be what he has done for the peace process in Northern Ireland.
Stalled it.
One could say that, but you must remember, without him, the DUP would not have been involved in the peace process, and indeed they would not have been involved in the power-sharing executive. And only he had that type of character, personality, charisma, political insight to achieve that. And that is huge for Northern Ireland, particularly for the DUP. So I think without him, we wouldn't have had the lasting peace that we have had.
Interested to get listeners' points of view on this. 086-77-00555 if you want to text or call us on 074-9125000. In 20, 30, 40, 50 years then, when we look back at Ian Paisley in a historic context, you believe it will be favourably?
I think it will. And you must remember, I think there's nearly two sides to his political career. Obviously, we have the early times where he was very vocal. He spoke out in quite an emotional manner. We know that at times he found it difficult to reconcile particular things. But in the latter part of his career, he was open to dialogue. He was open to reconciliation. He was very respectful to everybody he met. And then, of course, he retired at the age of 82, but he continued to have a figure within politics. He continued to visit countries like America, the Republic of Ireland. So he continued to work on the peace process in his own way. He did not give up on it, and I think that's very important.
He did end up forming very strong relationships with those who were, I suppose, his adversaries in the early parts of his career, not least the likes of Martin McGuinness, who gave a very emotional tribute to him, and also Bertie Ahern, the former Fianna Fáil party leader, also spoke very highly of him.
Yes, correct. And Martin McGuinness has a lovely tribute written today in the Irish Times, as has Bertie Ahern, and it's a real personal insight to both of their close personal relationships with Ian Paisley. Bertie Ahern describes him as a big man with a big heart, and Martin McGuinness spoke very eloquently and emotionally yesterday and called him a very close friend. And I think what the really positive thing of it is what politics can achieve, and within politics you have to reconcile, you have to change, you have to be open to dialogue. And I think in terms of Ian Paisley, he was an ultimate politician who delivered for his people, and he delivered that peace.
But on both sides, you know, it's great to have dialogue, it's great to have agreement, but when it comes so late and costs lives, we can't forget that either. I mean, there were people who perished because they couldn't sit down and come up with an agreement earlier, on either side for that matter.
That is correct, Greg, and it's a very sad part of our history. Very emotional, very dark days. We know that a number of commentators speaking yesterday about what happened in 1973 and how he broke down that power sharing agreement, but we have to be positive, and I think it's important to look at what he did achieve. It's important to look what was said yesterday and to look at what has been achieved in Northern Ireland.
And where we're at. Give us a feel then of what the papers are saying about it. Do you have one in front of you?
I do indeed. So I'm just going to go to the Daily Mail here. And what I'm going to begin with maybe is the tribute that came across the political spectrum. Our President Michael G. Higgins said, his embracing of the change necessary to achieve a discourse that might lead to peace was of immense significance, as was his commitment to building relationships in support of that peace. Taoiseach Enda Kenny, I know that he treasured the peace and friendship that he had lived to see and helped to build between our traditions. Northern Ireland Deputy First Minister Martin McGuinness, he says very simply, today I have lost a friend. I think that speaks volumes, Greg. Moving on to British Prime Minister David Cameron. The contribution he made in his latter years to political stability in Northern Ireland was huge. John Major, former British Prime Minister, says, Ian Paisley was a man of public passion and huge personal charm who cared deeply for the community he served.
And, but, you know, then again, in fairness to Enda Kenny, well, not in fairness to Enda Kenny, but to, in reference to Enda Kenny, I don't know what is quoted in the paper saying there, but his remarks were balanced, I think, in that he didn't overdo, he didn't overdo his words as it relates to Ian Paisley in a positive way. You know, he realised, stated that he was a divisive character, and perhaps in the fullness of time, you know, people will come up with a. That's what I'm saying about how he'll be viewed historically. You see, that's what interests me, and we won't know for a long time to come.
And he is a very controversial character, and there's other quotes there that you could read as well. His negative quotes that were made. The early part of his career. What I think is important in this, in terms of him being a religious leader, reconciliation is very, very important. And in the Free Presbyterian Church, there's a lot of articles on this today, particularly in the Irish Times, where he actually, he had a battle with this within himself. Mm. How could he be a minister and preach about Jesus Christ and then not actually go out and talk about forgiving of sins, talk about reconciliation, talk about building relationships and building bridges? So I think towards the end, he actually lived out that theology.
Mm. We're speaking to President Higgins a little later on, and he speaks very highly of Ian Paisley as well. But that's coming up in an interview later on that I did last night with the President in Buncrana. What else have we got there? Or do you want to, if you have anything to add on the Ian Paisley passing?
I think in terms of what's within the media today, I think in terms of politics and what is being achieved in Northern Ireland is absolutely huge. I think we have a lasting peace. I think to see the different personalities from the political spectrum come out yesterday and speak so highly of him speaks volumes. And I think in terms of going forward with the peace process, we do need commitment both within the Irish government and both within the English government. I think we need to look towards the future as well. That is important.
Okay, if you agree or disagree, call us 0749125000. We have Yvonne taking your calls today, as always, or you can text us 086 7700 555. What's next?
So I'm now going to move on to the Scottish referendum, Greg, and this is really capturing the imaginations of everybody. And I was watching Primetime there on Thursday night, and they just summed it up. It really is a debate of head, where people are perhaps saying no, and heart, where people want to vote yes. I think in terms of the Yes campaign, it has been a very good campaign. It has been very well organised, very well strategised. It's a local community campaign. I think it's interesting that the Conservatives have had to depend on the Labour Party, where we've seen Gordon Brown going down to Scotland, speaking out on behalf of the No campaign. So I think that is interesting.
They come up very late, though. It's clear the London-based establishment are incredibly fearful that this could go, as they would see it, the wrong way. Prime Minister's Questions Time cancelled last Wednesday. You did three leaders going up. That doesn't happen very often. And it smells to me of panic.
It does, absolutely. And some people are calling it a campaign of fear. And I totally agree. To see David Cameron literally rushing down to Scotland and making a hastily bid in terms of their campaign. Well, it's just not good enough. They should have been there earlier. So the Yes campaign has been better strategised. They've had a better team with on the ground. The Labour government particularly, I think, have had an important role to play. How this is going to play out in the next few days, I think it depends on how strong the No campaign come out. This morning I heard the Royal Bank of Scotland talking about that they would pull out of Scotland. So there's a lot of fear-mongering going on at the moment.
I mean, but you see, the problem is that's exactly what it is. It's scaremongering, because the Royal Bank of Scotland, as I understand it, they're not based in Scotland in any case, and they would only be moving effectively an address south. Mm-hmm. I think really there's a hunger for proper information, you know, by the people of Scotland, particularly those of the undecided. I think you're going to have your yeses and you're going to have your noes, and no matter what happens, they're going to vote that way. But there's a massive undecided there that's going to decide this. And the difficulty they have is the questions that they have, there aren't answers for. If you're a farmer, will you still get your European payments? Mm-hmm. There is no answer to that.
No.
Will the price of your shopping in Asda or Tesco go up? There's no answer to that. Will you become more rich because you would have more control of your resources? There's no answer to that either direction. So I think really, will you stay in the sterling? Will you use the sterling? Will you join the EU? Will you still be able to sell your produce to the EU? The undecided need, they may remain undecided because I believe those questions and questions similar to those that don't have answers, well, how can you make a decision that will affect your children and your children's children and so on and so forth?
Absolutely, Greg. And I think for everyday living, we need to know are the services going to be delivered in Scotland. Mm. And they talked yesterday about the block grant, which is worth 65 billion euro to the Scottish people, and that's given from Westminster. They're looking at how will their health service run. The currency issue has come up. I can't see Scotland leaving sterling straight away. That would have to be a very slow process. That would have to be done correctly. Tesco was on the radio this morning saying that they would not increase prices if it is a yes vote. So there is a lot to be decided. I think the no campaign is doing it on purpose as a strategy, not giving the correct information. So I think for people on the ground, it's going to be about jobs. It's going to be about the currency. It's going to be about services. It's going to be about, will they be able to sustain themselves as an actual country?
This is how fickle I am. The yes campaign's blue and happy and cheerful and sunshine. And then you see some of the Prescott was up there screaming his head off. And then you see the no campaign and it's red and angry and militant. You know, I mean, I wouldn't base my vote on that. But, you know, they're definitely winning in terms of the happy PR. I think yes is winning because Alex Salmond's got that sort of happy smiley face, hasn't he?
Absolutely. And even just in terms of jobs, I think the Royal Navy provides 45,000 jobs within Scotland. So they were talking about that yesterday. The trade unions have been very interesting in all of this, Greg, and they're coming out definitely on the no side in terms of jobs and employment and support from Westminster. I think whatever the outcome is at the end of this referendum, there will be a constitutional change within Scotland. Mm. I think they will have extra powers and extra devolved powers. And this will have a knock-on effect as well for Northern Ireland.
Well, we'll go into that. But you see, then the Yes campaign are using examples of some of the Nordic countries, I think, as to how small economies, you know, they're debt-free and what have you. They don't have to go very far to see a similar type country with our own natural resources, which, let's face it, we flogged the rights to. We get nothing, to all intents and purposes. We have oil and gas off our coast. We get very little from it.
Very little.
You know, we have a similar-sized economy. We have made a shambles of that. You know, perhaps the people of Scotland need to look west to see perhaps how small economies can go rather than to the east where it's all rather positive. You know, maybe they could learn from our mistakes. But what I'm saying is independence will not necessarily, as we've proven, will not necessarily bring prosperity.
Very, very much correct. The one thing I would say with regard to Scotland, their oil reserves are a lot more significant than ours. And you're talking about trillions of euro in terms of revenue. In terms of competing with Ireland, I think that's going to be a very interesting debate if it is a yes vote. I think you're looking at foreign direct investment. We're going to have massive competition there. They have a younger population. They have a population just as qualified as ours. So I think in terms of strategy, the big thing is if it's a yes vote, they will be looking at corporation tax and perhaps lowering it and copying our model for bringing in foreign direct investment.
Which is what Northern Ireland wants to do. Now, you mentioned the impact a yes vote could have on Northern Ireland. What did you mean by that?
Well, perhaps Northern Ireland might move in the same direction and look for a constitutional change in a referendum in much the same way, and they would be perfectly right to do so.
I don't think there's a will for that. I think, you know, I mean, Northern Ireland at the moment is very well subsidised by the London government, and there is obviously, without a shadow of a doubt, people listening to this programme today, indeed, that would love a united Ireland, but then there are others who would be opposed to it. And then there are a third group who you would expect would be in favour of a united Ireland, but then they look at the economics of it and they look at the practicalities of it and they go, well, you know what, let's just kick that ball down the road a bit.
In terms of their block grant from the UK, it's 10 billion towards Northern Ireland. I agree, but would one not argue that perhaps they are due that democratic right to actually vote in a referendum and to have their say? If Scotland was allowed to do that, should Northern Ireland not be allowed to do the same? I agree in terms of their economy. Their economy is extremely weak within Northern Ireland. They rely very heavily on Westminster. And we talked about the 10 billion block grant, but perhaps if it was a yes vote and they could change corporation tax and all the rest that goes with it, that's an argument for down the road. But you could argue today that if Scotland has been allowed that basic human right of democracy, mm-hmm. should Northern Ireland not be allowed the same?
Paisley was a bigot. He also did not like the Pope. That comes in from Malcolm. Another one says, I probably should proofread some of these because it is quite an emotive subject. How come now he's dead, he's a good man? If you didn't think he's a good man when he is alive, why when he's dead? Well, that's, I mean, it's a very fair point from the listener there, because we do tend to eulogise and speak highly. That's why I brought up Enda Kenny's comments, because I thought his was the most balanced in that, you know, he didn't overdo it. Mm-hmm. Another one says, Westminster had enough of the bombing in London and the citizens needed peace. They threatened to withdraw the Northern Irish minister's salary unless they shared power with the nationalists, hence the peacemakers talk. That's history, which is an interesting insight into that. Thank God Paisley Adams and McGuinness didn't have the negative attitude like you have, Greg. The three boys all were huge players in the war in the north, but thank God they saw sense in the end and got together and got involved in the peace process. Let the man rest in peace and remember he was a husband, father and granddad. And that's a very valid point.
It is.
But I'm not expressing a point of view. I'm merely trying to tease out the issues.
Absolutely.
But
yes.
Anyway,
yes.
Criticise me all you like. I'm not being defensive. It's perfectly fine. 086-7700-555. Or you can call us on 074-91-25000. Okay. So what way do you think it's going to go before, I mean, you know, this time next week, we will know effectively the outcome of the referendum. So
we will, and it, to be honest, it's just very close to call, Greg.
Then call it. That's what I'm asking you to do.
Right. If I was being very honest, I could see a no vote winning out. I think people will be very fearful in terms of jobs, in terms of the economy, in terms of the future. You know, being an independent state brings a huge amount of responsibility and challenges and problems. So, and once I must also say this as well, that once they are an independent state, it doesn't mean that you're totally free. You still have to do your trade bargaining. You're still part of the European Union. There will still have to be a lot of consultation. So that would be my opinion on it, but we shall see.
I'm going to guess no 58, yes 42.
Oh, so we agree on that. Well, I think the margin
will be quite wide. I think really it's going to be one of those that you can tell someone with a clipboard anything. You know, if you walk up to me with a clipboard, I could tell you anything you want. But when you walk into that booth,
yes,
and you're faced with that decision, then I think things can be very different. So, as I say, it's not an opinion, it's a prediction. No 58, yes 42. Text us how you think that's going to go, listeners, because I'll hold on to those and we can come back to it next week. Do you think people of Scotland will vote yes? Or indeed, no. Text me 086-7700-555. That's 086-7700-555. Or from outside Donegal in the north, 00353-867-7700-555. Call us to an 074-91-25000. I'll give you the... Why do we not have one number? Why do we have to have prefixes, especially between the north and south? 00353-749125000. If you're in Strabane, that's what you have to ring during Lifford or similar. It doesn't. I think we'd have overcome that at this point. Right, what are we going to next?
So I'm now going to go on to the IMF EU deal that is being struck out at the moment by
Michael
Noonan.
This is being renegotiated, isn't it?
Yes, that is correct. Now, I think this is very, very positive, and I would have to commend the finance minister for this. I think it's a step in the right direction. So yesterday, EU ministers have met and they have agreed to allow Ireland to repay our IMF loan earlier.
So what we're doing, we're borrowing money at a lower rate.
Yes.
And paying off the IMF borrowings, which have a higher interest rate. So we're not exactly, we're going to save money, but it's actually going to be on interest. Is that effectively it?
That's correct. So currently we are borrowing our money at 5%, and with this new deal, we'll be borrowing it at 2%. And they're looking at savings of 400 million a year. And then long term, you're repaying that 8 billion euro earlier, hence saving the tax money. Tax person more money. Now, I do think this is a step in the right direction. Mm-hmm. I think it's very positive. I think we have to commend Michael Noonan. He's had to do a lot of compromise. He's had to do a lot of debate and a lot of meetings. So what he's achieved is very positive for the country, and I have to commend him on that. It's a step in the right direction.
Mm. Anything that saves money.
Absolutely. And I think sometimes we can be a bit tough when we talk about finances. Now, how will this impact on the budget? That's going to be very interesting, Greg.
I don't think it will.
No, and the Taoiseach spoke about that yesterday, and he said, you know, we're not going to get ahead of ourselves. The budget has yet to be decided. All of our departments have to meet.
But I'm only listening to Leo Varadkar now. I'm not listening to anyone else. He says we're going to have 10 euro extra each a week. Forget the rest of them. I'm just listening to Leo. But what did you think of the public reprimanding that he had? I mean, Bertie Ahern, Enda Kenny scolded him publicly, effectively, and then Michael Noonan came out and said, the fella's run away with himself or something. Considering this is the Minister for Health as well, who's...
Yes.
It was a bit embarrassing for him, wasn't it? I mean, he was told off in public, there's no doubt about it.
He was, and to be honest, I feel with Leo, and he tends to make an awful lot of comments off the cuff, and I often think sometimes, because he's very well educated and he's very up to date on things, I often think, is this done as a strategic move? Now, he's in a very important portfolio, and I'm delighted that we have a new Minister for Health. He is a former GP, so he should have a great insight. The one thing I will respect him for, as soon as he got his portfolio within the Department of Health, he said, you know, I'm not going to make any decisions. I need to research. I need to see what I need to do. And I'm going to take my time to do that, which was effectively the summer. So for that, I thought, well, I commend that.
Yeah, but the net result of what he's done is effectively saying everything that James Riley was talking about, I'm not sure I can do and I need more money. I could have done that.
Realistically, it couldn't be done. That's the fact. And we in Fianna Fáil and the opposition parties have always said that. It could not be done. The finances were not there. And the fact that this fiasco went on for as long as it did with James Riley is unbelievable. I'm slightly disappointed that our Minister for Health has got into this debacle this week. He was doing a very good job. I think it makes light of a very important portfolio, a very important department. You're talking about people's lives. I think it was handled very badly. I think that he now needs to take on the responsibility of knowing what to say and when to say it, and that should come with the role that he's in.
Enda Kenny said to him, don't tell me, and he said this in an interview, not in a phone call, don't tell me what you can't do, tell me what you can do or how you're going to do it. I mean, is that really the dirty linen that should be washed in public?
Absolutely not. And as I say, it's such an important portfolio. I think our Minister for Health needs to be very careful in his statements and what he says, and I think it needs to be controlled. I don't think the Taoiseach should have made it quite so public, because it certainly didn't help the government and looked very unprofessional and naive. So I think it's something that our Minister for Health is going to have to be very mindful of what statements he makes in the future, because he's now in the Department of Health.
I think really what he needs to do is not make any statements, because every time he does, he's getting told off. More on that deal. So you think it's generally a positive thing?
I do. I think we're going to be saving money for the taxpayer. I think it's going to be very interesting in terms of the budget. A lot of talk about the universal social charge. Simon Coveney during the week was talking about perhaps a reduction in that. Now we shall see if that happens. That will be interesting if it does. Is there room to do that? I don't know. But it's going to be interesting to see, will it have a knock-on effect on the budget?
Sympathy must go to Ian Paisley's family. A loss is a loss, but he was a man who incited hatred for too long. The real peacemakers were Hume, John Major, Gerry Adams and Bertie Ahern. In fairness to Hume, he didn't fare too well in Ian Paisley's opinions. I think he was quite undermined by him, wasn't he? I seem to recall.
He was, and I think, again, that's due to the strong character of Ian Paisley as well.
I honestly do believe the visit that he had at the Sistine Chapel in Rome had a profound effect on him. After he came back, he seemed to have seen the light. That comes in from Christine, thank you. My opinion, all these politicians are hypocrites. My mother used to always say he was only good when he was too good to be bad. And another one on Scotland independence. I believe Scotland will vote yes on the simple prefect. They will go by pure emotion. In other words, that heart argument. Keep them coming in. Loads of you texting in for the first time too. 086 77 00 555. Or you can call us on 07491 25000. And a couple of nice comments coming in for you, Claudia.
Oh, thank
but
you.
But someone says, stop saying Westminster, say Westminster.
Oh, okay. She'll take that on board.
You have to take the good and the bad here. That's part of
absolutely. Now, I'm just going to go on to a local story within Donegal, okay. Greg, because I do think it's important to highlight. This evening in Finn Park in Stranorlar, we are having a celebrity match, and this is a charity event, and I think it would be a fantastic event for people to attend. So this event is being organised to raise money for the Bumblebee Ambulance. It's a children's ambulance service which promotes free medical transport for children to and from hospital. And the service is vital and it's very, very important here within the Northwest. So it's actually a celebrity match that's taking place this evening, Greg. Mm-hmm. You actually have somebody here from Highland Radio as well.
John Breslin.
John Breslin's taking part.
Breakfast show.
Yeah, so it should be very interesting. And
I don't think it we'll see how well he performs. We'll not prejudge John's performance, but he's very well equipped and I'm sure he'll do us very, very proud.
Excellent. So the organisers have managed also to secure comedy legend Danny O'Carroll, who is aka Buster Brady for Mrs. Brown's Boys. We also have FAI Chief Executive John Delaney, and we also have Niall McGarry.
He could get a bit of sledging. It'll be interesting, some of these tackles that are going in, but sorry.
It's going to be interesting. And we also have TV celebrity Brian Ormond. And
who?
Brian Ormond.
Who's that now?
He would be married to Pippa O'Connor. I think he used to do the winning streak.
he does the lottery, you see.
He does, Greg. and we also have RTE commentator Marty Morrissey. And locally we have...
That'll bring a good sizable portion of the female population.
I think it will, yes.
Marty seems to endear himself well.
He does, he always does, yes. And then we have our boxers, Jason Quigley. We have Willie, Big Bang Casey is his name. And then we have Michael Sweeney. So
it's a fantastic lineup, isn't it?
Fantastic, yeah. It's fantastic. And I think the fact that they're raising these funds for a great charity, and that kicks off this evening at 7 p.m.
The Bumblebee Ambulance is, I think, in fact, it's not Donegal based, it's national, isn't it? But I know for a fact that the first patient carried on it was a young Donegal person. Mm-hmm. And in what is an incredibly difficult time, not only for the child involved, yes, but for their family, you have this Bumblebee Ambulance in it's a happy environment.
Yes.
And anything we can do to, our children are so bloody brave too, you know.
Absolutely.
More brave than I or most adults could be.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic that we have this service that just eases that, but helps to ease it a little bit. And fair play to every just a little bit, but fair play to every single person involved in that. And kickoff is at
7 o'clock tonight, and it's a great family event, and I just think it's fantastic.
And I think they'll be with the people involved in that too. I think there'll be a lot of crack as well.
I think there will be. It'll be very enjoyable.
Especially if there's a mic handed around. There's definitely some great personalities there.
And indeed, we've lovely weather and a lovely evening. So if you can get there this evening in the Finn Park.
Just putting your teacher's hat on before we wrap up, Claudia. We had the junior cert results during the week. In fairness, I have to say the youth get a great deal of criticism. I'm not going to ask you to comment on this, but I'll say it myself, in that they went out, those that did go out went out and celebrated, and for the most part behaved themselves impeccably, as we would expect. And that's exactly what they did. And they deserve fantastic credit for that, as do moms, dads and guardians who sent them out with the right head on. In terms of the results, though, it's probably a exam that's going to change. It's already changing. It's probably going to change into the future.
It is.
What's your reflections on the junior cert during the week, or whatever you want to say about it?
On the junior cert results, very, very positive results. I think it's a culmination of 3 years' hard work from the students, from the teachers, from their SNAs, from the principals and the guardians and families, and so much work goes into this. And they were fantastic results, great positive reactions. And it's going to be the step now, the next step of their educational journey, which is their leaving certificate. We're now on a path of the new junior cycle, and it's now being brought in for the English curriculum at the moment. There has been a lot of talk with the department in relation to how that's going to be rolled out, but it is there and it is working. I think in terms of our education sector and system within Ireland, it is of just fantastic, immense importance to our young people and their future. So the one thing I would say is fantastic results, great work, well done to their teachers, well done to their families. The new junior cycle is there. It looks like it's there to stay. And as I say, I teach English, and that's the curriculum we're working from now at the moment.
Okay, anything you want to say before we wrap up?
No, just the last thing I would say, that if people can get to that celebrity match this evening,
yeah, it's
in the
a big
park,
I agree.
That's the big one for me.
Claudia Kennedy, thank you so much for coming in. It's always a pleasure. We'll see you again soon.
And thank you, Greg. Thank you for having me.
No problem. 086 77 00 555 is the text line. And let's actually do the Saturday, I'm going to call it the wedding weather. You know, so many people get married, and we want to know what the weather's going to be like today, or whatever you're doing out and about today. Misty patches clearing very soon. I can see out the window they're already trying to go. Maybe where you are they have already gone. Temperatures at 17 to 19 degrees, winds will be light, and we're going to have mild, good sunny periods today as well. Tonight will remain dry with clear spells. Temperatures 8 to 9 degrees. Sunday, mist and fog clearing to bright conditions during the morning, and it will become mild again. Temperatures tomorrow 15 to 17 degrees. Still to come on the programme, we are going to be speaking to Kate Houston, who's a retired clairvoyant medium. She's being impersonated on social media, and she wants to put out a warning there that people may be getting caught out in relation to that. But we're also going to be having a general chat about psychic mediums or clairvoyant mediums. If you have any questions, give us a text now, 086 77 00 555. There's going to be some cynicism there, and there's going to be those that will laud people like Kate for the work that they do. call us to 0749 125000. I had the absolute pleasure yesterday of meeting our president, Michael D. Higgins, in Boncrana. He's been up for the last 2 days, his last engagement coming up at 11 o'clock. I had a good 10 minutes with the president, and I find him actually just a pleasure to listen to. Fantastic orator. I like his use of language. But we touch on a couple of interesting subjects on that. That's also coming up for you. There's an interesting thing going on in Derry, I believe. It's a 48-hour boot camp. It's kind of where they start from scratch, and over the course of 48 hours, we'll talk about it, but you start with nothing. At the very end, you end up with a song. It sounds like an interesting initiative. We're going to chat about that. And then Culture Nights next Friday in Falkara, and we'll be speaking to someone taking part in that. That and so much more, as well as your calls, comments and requests to the Weekend Edition on 086 77 00 555 is the text number. Call us on 074 91 25000. If you want to tweet me, it's at Greg Hughes 2. What are those things in the sky called? I always get it wrong. The Northern Lights, isn't it? Northern Lights. I'll go with Northern Lights. I was reading there was quite a bit of action last night. If any of you saw them, were the Northern Lights visible last night? I know the conditions were somewhat okay for it. Anyone, any information on that? Because we do get calls and comments a lot from down the country, actually, to the station, wondering what the situation is there. So did the Northern Lights make an appearance for us last night, or indeed will they over the next day or two? If you have any insight into that to share with our listeners, again, call us, please. 074 91 25000. Congratulations and best wishes for a lifetime of happiness to Craig Stevenson and Marion McHugh. They're getting married today in St. Patrick's Church, Minacross. Love coming in to you from Margaret, Huey, David, Amory, Anthony, Siobhan, Gavin, Erin and Shane. Back after the break. Okay, you're very welcome back to the programme. Ciara Doherty, a very good morning.
Good morning to you, Greg.
How are you getting on?
The very best. Good. I'm actually sitting here in Donegal. I'm home for the weekend, looking out at the sunshine on the water, so I couldn't be better.
Well, it sounds absolutely lovely. Good to have you home from Dublin, where you work for TV3. You have an interesting show coming up. Tell us about it.
I do. I have a one-hour documentary which is being broadcast on TV3 this Wednesday night at 9 p.m. It's called At Home with Irish Country Music. So it should be of interest, I think, to many Highland Radio listeners who I know are probably big fans of the country music scene. Basically, during the summer, off the back, I suppose, of the furore around the Garth Brooks tickets, I think a lot of people were quite shocked that there could be 400,000 people, 400,000 country music fans who are willing to spend money to come and see Garth Brooks. But over the last, I suppose, year or two, driving around the country as I do with my job, I became aware of all of these venues right across Ireland, from Cork right up to Donegal, mm-hmm. where country music was being played in sort of in the style of the show bands, almost 7 days a week.
And do you think that perhaps, particularly maybe those in urban areas, don't realise that? Because country music, its reputation has changed. We've got new young artists, many that you're going to be speaking to, who have revolutionised it once again, I suppose you could say, in that you can have a disco now at one end of the street, and you can have Derek Ryan playing on the other end of the street, and your 18 to 25s are as likely to be in watching Derek Ryan as they are dancing to Rihanna. I mean, it really has changed big time.
Yeah, it absolutely has enjoyed a revival and is enjoying a revival over the last year or 2-3 years, maybe even with Nathan Carter, Derek Ryan, Lisa McHugh, some of these newer acts. And I don't think people in more urban areas have any idea how big the country music scene is. And they don't understand perhaps why people love the music, why people are so loyal, why more and more young people are dancing to it. And they do see it, I suppose, as country music for country people. But slowly but surely, it is creeping in, and it is coming in from the kind of rural locations and is being played in towns like Letterkenny and Donegal Town and Ballybofey, you know, some of the bigger towns, almost 7 nights a week. So sort of examining the documentary follows four of the biggest stars, Lisa McHugh, Jimmy Buckley, Robert Mazzell and Derek Ryan, and meet some of the fans as well. And we're actually in two venues in Donegal. We're in Logues of Cranford with Robert Mazzell, and we're in the Abbey Hotel with Jimmy Buckley, because I couldn't do a documentary about country music and not come to Donegal.
I know
we talk about the revival and we know it's popular now, but it sort of has always been popular in Donegal. Perhaps it just wasn't as mainstream as it is, I think.
And I think it's really the fact that it's across generations as well. So what way are you coming at it? Are you coming at it sort of like, oh my God, we've only just realised country music is huge, let's get an insight as to why? Or are you accepting that it's big and we're talking to the characters that have made it big and understanding it a bit more? What way are you coming at it? Because I do understand you have to appeal to a broad audience.
Yeah, well, it's two things. It's meant to, I suppose, be an introduction to those who don't know anything about country music, to see what is it about the music that people love. Why is it that they will go to a gig 3, 4, 5 times a week? What is it about the jive scene and the waltz scene that makes it so attractive to older people and more younger people? And why are younger people coming to this music and kind of turning away from the more traditional pop music and dance music that you would associate with young people? And then, I suppose, for those who love country music, it's to see their favourite artists in their home environment, with Jimmy Buckley in his home and with Robert Mazzell in his home, Lisa McHugh and Derek back in their own environments, and suppose getting an insight into what their lives are like outside of the country music scene, or indeed as they prepare for gigs.
Tell us about the Bridge Tavern. It's almost been approached as an experiment, is it?
Yeah, I went to the Bridge Tavern, which is a place in Canningstown, which is a small village in Cavan that has a population of about 500 people. And the night before, or a couple of nights before, I'd been with Derek Ryan in the Olympia Theatre. He was headlining the Olympia, which is a huge night for any country music star. And it was, I suppose, showing people that country music is, as I say, coming to the capital and it's becoming more cool, as some people would say, and that it is now filling out these venues that you would not associate with country music, and maybe he had about 700-800 people. But a couple of nights later, I went to Canningstown because they were holding the first ever Hoolie at the Bridge, they were calling it. And it's literally now a very small village with the Bridge Tavern, its main bar, and they erect a marquee and they bring in country music star Lisa McHugh, who's not very well known in that area.
Is that it, like, sort of, if we build it, they will come sort of a thing, or will they?
Or will they? And that was sort of a worry for the manager there, because he'd spent a lot of money erecting this marquee.
Now, don't spoil it for us, Lisa. I want to see what happens.
Putting in a bar. Yeah. But it becomes, I suppose, quite clear that country music, it has its roots and does belong in rural Ireland. And that's where people are incredibly loyal and incredibly dedicated to it. And yeah, if you put it up, they will come.
You've ruined it now, but I'll watch it anyway. So it ends up being wedged and everyone's dancing around to Applejack. Kira, when's the show air?
It airs this Wednesday night at 9 p.m. on TV3.
And it's a one-hour documentary.
It's a one-hour. And you will see, as I said, Logues and Cranford, which is on a quiet Tuesday night. Yeah. It's not quiet the night we're there, and also the Abbey Hotel in Donegal.
Great, so we'll get to see a few faces as well. And if you can't catch it live, then the TV3 player's there as well, I presume. It'll be up on that. Kira, it's been fantastic to speak to you. It's great to have you back home, and great to see you doing so well too in the Big Smoke.
Thank you very much, Greg.
Thank you. That's Donegal's own Kira Doherty there, talking about her TV3 documentary, which takes place. It's on TV3 this coming Wednesday night. It's going to be interesting, and you'll get to see that local venues in there as well. I think some of it's going to be a little bit of telling us what we already know, that country music is huge at the moment. I just want to mention that the Buncrana Flower Arrangers Group are organising a flower festival in the local nursing unit as a fundraiser for the Patients' Comfort Fund on the 13th and 14th of September. The theme of the festival is the famous hymn All Things Bright and Beautiful by Cecil Francis Alexander, and also incorporating Amazing Grace by John Newton, as the area around Lough Swilly is known as Amazing Grace Country. We chose the famous hymn All Things Bright and Beautiful, as Cecil Francis Alexander lived in Fawn from 1855 to 1860. The flower arrangements will depict the verses of the hymns. Isn't that sounds very interesting, flower arranging to words. The Buncrana Nursing Units have fantastic facility, as we know, to have in our community, they say, and nurses and carers do fantastic work both in the residential and daycare centre. They say there's some fantastic musicians, singer and dancers performing in the garden, and the weather hopefully will last, fingers crossed, and it'll be a great weekend. So that's this weekend, is it? The 13th, 14th, the date's gone off my clock here. What is it today? Today and tomorrow. Well, you're guaranteed good weather. That's fantastic news. So it is today and tomorrow. Tea, coffee and refreshments will be available. Everyone's welcome. And all proceeds go to the Patients' Comfort Fund. So doesn't that sound like a fantastic thing to do in a fantastic setting on what's going to be two beautiful days today and tomorrow? We wish you the very best of luck with that. Something that grabbed my eye in the papers today. 18 teachers from the same area forced to emigrate in the Irish Independent. 18 qualified teachers have left the same rural parish in the past 2 weeks to take up jobs abroad because they couldn't find work here. This is according to a heartbroken mother. 13 of the teachers have gone to the Qatar capital of Doha. All are from Gwydor, the rural Gaeltacht parish in West Donegal. The others have gone to Australia. So that's 18 from that area. Isn't that a shocking amount? Listen, some of them are going to be going on the most fantastic adventure of their lives, and I'm rather jealous to some extent, but then others are forced to go, and that's a definitely a sad state of affairs. Keep your calls, comments and texts coming in. We've been very busy for the first hour so far. Thank you so much for that. 086 77 00 555 is the text line, or you can call us on 074 912 525 000. And if you're calling from outside the Republic, you drop the O and it's 00353. Tons to come on the programme, including we'll be speaking to a medium. Already someone's texted in to say, could you ask her the lottery numbers or Euro Million numbers? I'll give her a few million for herself. Well, we'll see if we get any insight into that. And also, very much looking forward to hearing the interview with President Michael D. Higgins, who's in Donegal. We touch on a couple of interesting subjects contained there within that interview. That's all coming up between now and 12 o'clock on the Weekend Edition with Greg Hughes. And all you listening wherever you are today, we very much want you to get involved in the programme. Okay, we'll be back after this break.
Until happiness
That's the Four Tops there, of course. Texter says, morning, Greg. Once again, a great show. Thank you very, very much. Would you please play a birthday request for Eddie Breslin Strabán, wishing him a happy birthday from his brother Paul and his family in Donegal Town. We all know he'll do this very best, his very best to enjoy the day. That's Eddie Breslin listening in Strabán there. Many of you have... fans of soap operas over the years, EastEnders, you'd be very familiar with a John Barden. Well, he's passed away. EastEnders star June Brown yesterday led tributes to her co-star, saying he loved him, she loved him dearly. John the Soap's Jim Branning died at 75 following a lengthy battle with ill health. June, who played his TV wife, Dot Cotton, said, I hope he's now at peace. I shall miss him very much, as I loved him dearly. She said her thoughts were with John's real wife, Edna Gates, who he had supported, who had supported him through 7 difficult years since the stroke. John's death early yesterday morning was announced by the BBC, and I believe, although I don't watch it, that last night's episode of EastEnders was dedicated to the memory of John Barden, who many will remember very fondly, a familiar face from childhoods or earlier in your adult life, so on and so forth. Keep the text, calls and comments coming in, please. 0867 00 555 or call us on 0749 125 000.